Hello and welcome to the Social Media Show podcast, sponsored by Social Pilot, the social media management and scheduling tool. I'm your host, Jonathan Pollinger, and I'm a social media trainer. In each episode, you'll learn how an inspiring personality uses social media, and you'll pick up some cutting-edge techniques and top tips. You can also watch the show live at 9 a.m. on Mondays, or catch the replay on my Facebook page at facebook.com/PollingerSocial. Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the Social Media Show, sponsored by Social Pilot. This week I talk with Jamie Lee Cole, Communications Manager at The Wallish, a charity that supports the homeless. You'll learn more about this great charity and how they communicate. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe and leave a review. Thank you. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Social Media Show, whether you're watching live, watching the replay, or listening to us on the podcast. Just a bit of podcast news. We're available on pretty much all the major platforms, but also now Deezer. So if you're on Deezer, you can pick up the Social Media Show on there. So great to have Jamie Lee Cole with me this morning. Good morning, Jamie Lee.
Morning. Borodar.
Yeah, Borodar. Could you just kick us off? Could you tell us a little bit about how you ended up working in the charity sector and specifically for the Wallach?
Yeah, sure. So the goal for me was always to work in the third sector, really. It's something that always resonated with me. I did politics and modern history at university, and throughout that time I was volunteering. I worked with a local Rotaract club, which was more about kind of donating your time. We dipped into homelessness as a topic. We'd done projects with refugees as well. And then when I came out of university, the job market wasn't amazing. So for a while, it was a case of take whatever you can get, really. But I ended up working in a specialist alcohol shop, which is not what you want to hear at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning. So I won't go too much into that, but everything was quite high ticket, and I sort of ended up marketing out of boredom, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So yeah, I'd see two or three people in a day, and I'm quite a social person, and I really needed to help grow the store, really. So we had a little bit of a digital presence, but not much of at all. I think we had like 100 followers on Twitter, and that was about it. So I helped grow that social market and develop media partnerships, that sort of thing, around Father's Day, Mother's Day, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's always a good thing to do, isn't it, with social media, to kind of like look at the calendar of upcoming events, whatever they are, and then if you can link in with them, it's a good tactic, because it's kind of what people are thinking about and talking about.
Yeah, piggyback something of relevance. I think it's not going to be relevant for everything, but you know, pick a few and do it properly is what I would recommend. But yeah, then I was offered an opportunity in the private sector. So I started working for a communications agency called Freshwater. They were very, very good to me. I learned a lot from those guys, and I was with them for about 3 years. But throughout that time, I was still volunteering. So, you know, I still had that passion for the third sector, and particularly social justice issues, anything to do with poverty in particular, that was something that I felt really strongly about. So I made the jump 2.5 years ago into the third sector, to the Wallach, because, well, they had a job that was basically written for me. I saw it and was like,
perfect.
If I don't get this, this is I'm doing something wrong. And the Wallach especially, it had a lot of values that I really resonated with. So, for example, we have a commitment to hire 25% of our workforce as having lived experience of homelessness by 2020. So we're currently at about 19%, which is great. So, we just really think that, how can we be telling employers and other businesses that they should hire people with lived experience of homelessness, gaps in employment, criminal records, all things like that, if we don't practice what we preach? So
that's bound to give you a better understanding of a homeless person's position as well, if you're actually engaging with them and seeing them on a daily basis.
Yeah, definitely. And vice versa, we see a lot more people rough sleeping who are willing to engage mm-hmm. with those who have actually been through it.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, we have something in Cardiff called the peer mentor team who work with Cardiff Council and ourselves who have lived experience and take on caseloads, basically. And yeah, we're seeing huge success with it in terms of people who are entrenched rough sleepers who've been out for quite a long time. They're yeah. starting to engage because, you know, maybe there's a mistrust in services or a breakdown in relationship with services. So bringing in people who can actually talk about what they've been through, it seems to really click.
Sure. And it seems like, you know, as you know, but well, both of us are running the Cardiff Half coming up on Sunday. And since I've kind of become aware of the Walsh, it's like there just seems to be so many different strands and things that you do actually do. I mean, there's the sort of like sharp end task force stuff on the street, but lots of other stuff as well. Perhaps you could just sort of, if it's not going to take too long, because as I say, it's quite a lot, sort of a bit of a sort of run through all the different activities that the charity does.
Yeah, for sure. So I can kind of break it down from our mission statement, really. Mm. So that's broken down into three core aims. So the first is getting people off the streets. The mm-hmm. second is keeping people off the streets. And the third is creating opportunities for people. And what that means is that you see pathways where we can help try and break repeated cycles of homelessness and make sure we reduce that risk of people becoming homeless after they've been housed and have been through recovery again. So the getting people off the street side, as you said, it's the sharp end. It's outreach. It's drop-in centres. It's mobile outreach. So it's provisions, it's food, it's making sure that we're signposting, helping people connect with housing services in their local authority, claiming benefits, all that kind of thing. The second is keeping people off the streets. So that's your accommodation projects, essentially. So the Woolwich started in 1978. We celebrated our 40th birthday last year, but with just one hostel. And that hostel's still going in Cardiff on Broadway. That's a 28-bed hostel.
Yep.
That has now developed and grown, and we've got hostels all across Wales. Hostels aren't for everyone, so we've got different types of accommodation as well. So we will have abstinence-specific projects, so people who maybe previously had an addiction but are in recovery. Mm-hmm. We have projects that are just for women, projects for families, projects for young people, because you can provide tailored support that is, and they can be around people their own age with similar situations, feel part of a community, which is something that when you have experience of rough sleeping, isolation is a big part of that. So we want to be creating small communities and get people to make friends who have similar experiences as them as well. So that's keeping. The third is creating opportunities for people. So this is all about creating sustainable recovery. So things like employability projects. So not everybody is going to be able to work, but we can do things like help build confidence. We can do things like mock interviews and professional boundaries training, all these types of things that if you've been out of work for a while or if you've never had a job, you're not really taught in schools and things like that so much. So doing that in a safe environment that is specific to people who've experienced homelessness. We also do a lot in the arts and in sport. Mm-hmm. A couple of months ago, the Homeless World Cup came to Cardiff.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, which was fantastic. So we had a bit of a role in that in terms of safeguarding. But we know a lot of our clients went through in terms of volunteering and playing, which we really see the benefits for creating structure, discipline. And again, that feeling part of a community, creating shared experiences and out of the ordinary opportunities as well to make people remember that they are a valued person who deserves to have nice things.
Fantastic. So all in all, it's a real sort of like big picture project is perhaps not quite the right word, because that's sort of like underdoing it a bit, but it's a real sort of like long-term solution, isn't it? That you're the all-encompassing long-term solution, perhaps, might be a slightly better way of putting it. But yeah,
absolutely. And you know, we have 68 projects at the moment across those three things across Wales, and 18 local authorities. We're not going to have, you know, every one of those types of projects in every local authority, but it's responding to the need and whatever we can get commissioned, really.
Sure. And moving on to your own role, so your communications manager, what does that involve? Who are you communicating to? Is that sort of everything sort of internal and then sort of different external audiences as well, or is it more specific than that?
Yeah, it's kind of everyone. So we have a great supporter base. So it's communicating with them. It's the general public.
Yeah.
It's decision makers, policy makers, councillors, all that sort of thing. And then internally as well. So we've got our own staff and then our own client base as well. So people already engage with our services to do those out of the ordinary projects like arts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, making sure that if somebody is at risk of homelessness, they know that where they can come.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of everything, really. In terms of my role, I'm essentially in charge of creative output. So we're very, very lucky in that we have a really strong team at the moment. We have our own in-house graphic designer, which a lot of charities are not.
Oh yeah, that's very handy. Yeah.
Yeah. So he literally sits behind me, so I can, you know, shout over my shoulder.
Get stuff done. Yeah.
Hey, I need a graphic for this. I need a sharer for social. Like now, can you do it?
Yeah.
Whereas if you outsource it, yes, you know, there's going to be, you might get some different perspectives in terms of creativity, but our graphic designer knows our brand. Like he essentially is brand manager. He knows our brand. He's worked for us for the last 15 years. And you know, it's something that I don't necessarily have to worry about too much.
Brilliant.
So yeah, I'll oversee a lot of that output. I do quite a bit of PR as well. So writing press releases. A lot of the time, the majority of my job in terms of PR is protecting clients. So if we have arranged an interview, or in most cases, a journalist will come to us and say, I'm writing a story about this. Have you got a case study?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So my job then is to protect the client, make sure that they are comfortable, make sure that if they have specifically said that they don't want to talk about something, that is honored.
Yep.
If they're being pushed on something and they feel uncomfortable, then I can
push back on that. Yeah.
Exactly. Like I have absolutely no problem stopping an interview for those reasons. I've only ever had to do it twice. But yeah, if somebody's in distress, then, you know, I'm more than happy to step in. So yeah, there's the public relations side of it. Internally, we do a staff newsletter, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other arm? Oh, and then social media. So we have a communications officer who largely delivers it, but I help write the strategy and things like managing budgets in terms of any paid for campaigns and things like that. So it's super varied in terms of my role. But like I said, we have a great team. So we have a head of communications and public affairs. We have a communications officer. We have a graphic designer and myself. We also have a post at the moment in terms of the public affairs arm that we're looking at the moment, which is quite exciting. You know, my background is in politics, so I like to join some of those discussions and how we talk to people in that arena.
So in the time that you've been working for the Wallish, have you seen sort of social media become more important in terms of raising awareness and perhaps fundraising too?
Yeah. So when I started with Wallich, we had Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Facebook,
LinkedIn, yeah.
LinkedIn. We didn't
but not
have
Facebook.
No. For legitimate reasons, with our client base, we're working with very chaotic people who are working with support workers. In a lot of the time, they live and work in the same area as them. So it's a bit of a minefield in terms of professional boundaries and things like that. So it's something that we were very cautious of for a little while. But also our channels in terms of Twitter and LinkedIn were super, super strong. So
right, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of our resources, we wanted to focus on the few channels that were the most important and do them well. So Facebook, eventually we started up an account last year.
Okay, recently then.
Yeah. So yeah. Mostly because we had additional resource and we wrote a policy that would mitigate a lot of those risks and concerns that we had. I think, you know, when you work for a lot of charities, there are going to be these blurred boundaries in terms of social media. It's very easy for somebody who is a client to go on Facebook and find their support worker. And, you know, they might be doing that anyway, but if it's specifically linked to a corporate account, things can maybe get a little bit messy. But Facebook has been very successful in the last year in terms of creating an audience. We've now got an audience online through our social media channels of more than 10,000 people, which is incredible. Considering, you know, there's 3 million people in Wales, you know, that's the pool that we're working with, really. And a lot of the time, there's going to be individuals, but there's going to be other agencies, there's going to be businesses and things like that. So, yeah, we're really, really proud of the work that we've put in terms of that.
So now that you're kind of like well represented across the social network board, so to speak, which would you say is the most successful right now of the channels?
I still think Twitter is perhaps the most successful.
Okay.
Do
you use that sort of reaching out to companies and stakeholders and that sort of thing? Is that the main sort of use?
Yeah, I think in terms of reaching out to businesses and they, in terms of fundraising and volunteering and stuff like that, there's a higher return in investment. So that's super successful. Facebook has been successful in terms of community awareness.
Right.
So not necessarily fundraising so much, more awareness. You know, the more we're putting our events on Facebook and things like that, it is helping in terms of turnout. You know, and the audience reach is fantastic, but in terms of return on investment, I think Twitter is probably still our most successful.
Fantastic. And if companies wanted to sort of work with you, what would you advise them to do? There's someone that they can get in touch with, and what are the sort of different ways that they could help the Wallish?
Yeah, sure. So there's a few, really. So obviously you've got your corporate fundraising. You know, you can do bake sales and your mufti days, dress down days, all that kind of stuff. And you know, we really appreciate all those kinds of things that come up. Taking on challenges as well. You mentioned the Cardiff Half Marathon earlier. We've got a couple of organizations who have started corporate teams running which is really cool, in terms of team building and morale and things like that. We also have a corporate competition, which is running at the moment, called the Clash of the Corporates. So we do it every year.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have 50 days. We invest £50 in the organization, and then it's a competition to see who can raise the most money in that 50 days. So there's a program of team building exercises. So you have to come up with things like your treasurer, your secretary, your social media person, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's a nice event at the end where you get to meet all your competitors, you get to network and all that kind of thing, which is great. But then
sounds like a lot of fun, that one.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. We've had some really, really good teams in the past who've raised a lot of money, but have also stayed on with us beyond the competition.
To do more support, yeah. And how many sort of companies would you get involved with a team challenge like that?
Usually around 10.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so usually around 10 per time. And it finishes just before
Christmas
as well, which is always good. Christmas is big time for us, so it's nice to sort of preload fundraising before we've even started, really. Yeah, but then beyond fundraising, we are always looking for corporate mentors. So we are trying to get people back into work or get people work experience a lot of the time. So if you have, you know, any part of your organization that is needs some additional help or you think would offer valuable transferable skills to our client base, or, you know, we're looking at things like, you know, admin based things, IT support, all those kinds of jobs that are entry level to help people get their foot in the door. We have a project called Working in Sustainable Employment. The short term acronym is WISE, the WISE project.
Yeah.
Our organization loves an acronym. which is fun. But that's a 6-month employability course for our client base who are in accommodation in general. And they go through all those professional boundaries, confidence workshops, things like that. But there's a 6-week work placement alongside that. So we'll ask the guys, what are you interested in?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think your skills would be valuable? We offer a lot internally in terms of work experience. So a lot of our guys want to go into support work because, you know, they've received a certain level of support and they have experiences that are of value. So if they want to do that, we will help them find a spot. But not everybody wants to do that. We've had people go to gyms, learn about personal training.
Mm-hmm.
We've had people go to media companies, events companies, all those sorts of things. So if anybody does have anything in their organization that they think, well, actually, we want to diversify our pool of our workforce and get some new ideas in, or even just, you know, diversify your employees that way, we would love to hear from you. Alongside that, our organization does offer support as well in that transition back into work. So if somebody's doing a work placement on the WISE project, there is a mentor that will check in with the employer and check in with the client as well. So make sure that everybody's okay. Any safeguarding issues, you know, we can mitigate those risks. You know, there's risk assessments and all that kind of stuff. GDPR, you know, that's a big deal. And we need to support those. You know, if people have been out of work for a little while, we do see sometimes, you know, people might be late for work often because, you know, out of the routine, and also priorities. They've probably still got quite a lot going on in terms of, you know, I need to meet my support worker at the job centre or probation, you know, all these kinds of things that, you know, perhaps, you know, if you had somebody anybody else in for work experience or entry level, an employer might not think about. So, you know, we're there to kind of handhold employers in that respect. Oh, and then there's corporate volunteering. So, you know, we, like I said, we do arts projects and we do gardening projects and things like that. So if anybody did want to come and help us spruce up one of our hostels, do some painting, all that.
Okay. Yeah, I get the idea. Yeah,
we've got lots of those programs.
So lots and lots of different ways that companies can get involved then, and their staff can enjoy the various activities there that you're offering. It kind of seems like you're bringing a lot of people together, really, because you've got the trying to get the wider public on side in terms of donations and that sort of thing. You've got all the different organisations, like with your charity, might not be so obvious for some, but you know you're going to be working with councils and probably Welsh Government, I imagine, a fair bit as well. There's that, and then there's the employers as well, so it's like you're trying to sort of bring everybody together for the common good there to try and solve homelessness, which is brilliant. So just a couple of final questions in terms of other charities, people that are watching or listening from other charities, what would be your advice for improving their communications? And let's sort of keep it relatively, let's sort of talk about external rather than internal, because a lot of them might be quite sort of small organizations anyway. So what would you say would be a single sort of most important thing they could focus on to raise awareness and communicate what their charity is about to the wider world?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of things on a shoestring and we do a lot of things in-house when we can. So we've invested in video equipment.
Mm-hmm.
that has really, really helped diversify our media offering in terms of social media and when we're putting press releases and things like that together, and also collecting case studies. It's actually taken a lot of work out in terms of going to interview people and sharing their stories. So if I can have a conversation with somebody over video, I can then cut that video and I can use it for social media, but I can also which is great. I can take the audio from it if we want to put it on top of something else, and it takes away that barrier that a lot of our client base, and I think other charities will have this as well, where, you know, a lot of the time the client base will have to make appointments where they're sat with a computer screen between the two of you, or a piece of paper in between you. And that's kind of a barrier to communication, because it's official. Yep. It's tiresome if you've had to repeat your story over and over and over again. Whereas if you're just filming or even voice recording, you can have a genuine conversation with somebody and build up a rapport, which is really, really lovely. And, you know, we don't get as much FaceTime with clients as I would like. So doing something like that has really improved the quality of what people share with us, and building those relationships and helping people come back to us. But also in terms of engagement, you know, video is great.
Very important now,
It is, and making sure that you have, you know, there's loads of free apps that you can download to edit your videos, making sure that you spend time putting subtitles on them and things like that, because a lot of people don't turn the sound on when they're looking at videos. I know that I don't. When I'm scrolling through Twitter, when I'm trying to get out of bed in the morning, I'm just looking through and reading. And it helps you be more creative in terms of your cross-platform creative. So, you can use it on Facebook, you can use it on Instagram, you can use it on LinkedIn, and people, it's going to pull people in. And, you know, I think not everybody wants to read a case study that's sort of 300-400 words. Actually hearing it from somebody and getting a flavor of who they are as a person and their personality, I think has been really, really valuable, because, you know, it is a competitive market out there for charities. You know, there's so many issues in terms of our society that we need to be plugging the gaps and chipping in. So I think making sure that the people who you're supporting are heard as authentically as possible is really going to resonate with people.
Yeah, that's a really strong message. That's brilliant. Thank you for that. And just a couple of things. So I've heard on the grapevine that you like a glass of port. Is this true?
Yeah, definitely my favorite drink.
So if you were to go for a glass of port with any living person, who would that be and why? What would you talk about?
Oh my gosh. Let's have a think. I mean, Porto is like my favorite place in the world. So ideally,
It would be there then. That would be the location, would it? You wouldn't be short of port there then.
No, we're on the River Douro. We're drinking port. Thinking at the moment, I think Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye would be a really interesting person to have a drink with. So they have just come out as non-binary. So I would like to talk a little bit more about that, because just in terms of the reception that they've had, and, you know, gender and sexuality and all those types of things, I think is an interesting conversation to have in terms of understanding. Like, I feel like I'm fairly switched on to social issues in terms of those sorts of things. But you never
like
really
to learn
know.
More and talk more about it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Develop an understanding in terms of how you communicate with other people, those sorts of identities and ideas. And also, they're super fun. So there's a lot that you can cover. I mean, I'd love to get some hair tips, obviously. I think so. They have a podcast called Getting Curious,
okay,
where they invite somebody on each week to talk about a different subject that they don't know anything about. And I really love that philosophy, talking to people who actually know what they're talking about and admitting that you don't know about this thing and learning more about it. So in the spirit,
yeah, I have to check that out.
Yeah, so in the spirit of that, I think they would be a great companion to drink some port.
cool. And just to finish off, how's the training going? So less than a week to go now for the Cardiff half. How are you fixed?
Yeah, it's going all right. I've got blisters on my blisters on my blisters.
Oh dear.
Yeah, which
lots
is
lots of plasters on the big day then.
Mm-hmm. Compede is my savior at the moment, but yeah, it's my first half marathon. Is it yours? Yours as
it
well?
Is. Yeah.
So I feel like I'm past nervousness now, and I've just kind of accepted my fate that it's happening, and I have to do it. So yeah. I feel all right about it. I've definitely noticed a shift in terms of my mindset. I've stopped looking at Strava when I'm running for like the first 5K. I'm more thinking about where I've got to go, and not necessarily which point are the milestones, how far I've gone and that sort of thing. And the fact that my partner and I on a Sunday would be like, oh, okay, I think I'm only going to do like a 7K today.
Yeah.
Just a short one, which is insanity, because a couple of weeks ago we would have been like, I hit 7, which is great. So, I mean, it's a long old way, but, you know, Cardiff is a great scene for it. And I'm looking forward to it. Just fingers crossed for the weather now, I think.
That's it. Yeah. I'm checking it yesterday, actually, and it seems to vary a bit, but something between 25% and 50% chance of rain, they're saying. So if you flip that around, that's potentially a 75% chance of sunshine. So let's hope. Well, actually, not too much sun. We don't want too much sun, do we? We just want it to be dry and plenty of nice air to breathe.
Yeah, I think it's going to be windy either way. So, you know, hopefully it's blowing in the direction of the way that we're going and not running against it.
yeah, it'll follow us around, I'm sure. But great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for the chat and all the advice, and very interesting to learn about your career and the Wallish.
Thank you, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Social Media Show podcast, sponsored by Social Pilot. And if you'd like to learn more about how I can help you make the most of social media for your business or organization, please visit pollingersocial.co.uk, or you can find me on social media at pollingersocial.